President Trump speaks to the nation tonight in his first address to a joint session of Congress. He'll lay out budget and other priorities, and the address will be carried live here on the News and Information Service at 6 p.m. One presidential priority is already clear, and that's to more strictly enforce immigration law. That cheers Trump supporters and causes anxiety for people who live in the country without the benefit of legal status. That includes young people going to college, and so campuses are responding to support their students. We have two guests with us so far and a third on the way. From Southern Oregon University, Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is the Director of Diversity and Inclusion. She's here in the studio with me. Marjorie, good to see you again. And that it's on mic six, Darnell, for her. And Corey Ebenhack is from Rogue Community College, where she's the Vice President of Student Services. Thank you for joining us, Corey.
Thank you.
So give us a general sense of what's going on your campuses, because obviously there's been election inauguration and then travel ban, legal action, crackdown on immigration. People, lots for students to ingest and try to figure out their place in this world. Corey, give us a sense of what's happening at the RCC campuses.
Well, I think initially there was some student fear. We saw students reacting and looking for allies on campus to process their feelings and looking for resources in the community for more information. I think these students have some legitimate concerns, and we try to be a docu-friendly campus and provide safe zones for students to check in with counselors, access legal resources, and really to just process what's really happening in the shift in our society and our local communities.
What was that term, docu-friendly campus?
Docu-friendly, yeah.
Which means what?
I think it's a response that campuses are trying to display and illustrate that they're sensitive to students without federal documentation. So financial aid processes and other issues that our students face on campus. I just think it's a new term that's kind of cropping up in education.
Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, give us a sense of the same mood at Southern Oregon University and what's been happening on the campuses.
I would say that it's quite similar. The day after the elections, we held special sessions for students to come and drop in with some of our support staff and faculty who are closely connected to our undocumented students, just to gain a sense of what they are feeling and what they're dealing with. I think that it's a far more complicated issue than we give it credit. It's not just the students that we work with, but also having some considerations of their families, their friends, and the community that they live within. And so while some of our students might not be undocumented, they might have close loved ones that are. And so being able to be supportive in all of those realms for them. So the family dynamic is quite significant for our students. And so
that's a good point to bring up, that even if you're not talking about undocumented students, they may have undocumented people in their families. So the concerns may not be just for themselves, but for other people they know and love.
Right. So it might be the fear of going home and not seeing their parents, or having a sense that something has happened to one of their siblings.
What do you have any idea of the percentages on your campuses of people who might have some connection, either they're undocumented themselves or that they do have family members who are undocumented?
We don't have a sense of percentages, but the folks that we know outright, it's very minimal on our campus, but we've done a lot of things to support them in terms of making sure that they felt supported, connecting with them, letting them know what our stance is and how we're still here and will continue to be here in support of them and their educational endeavors.
Any idea the numbers of the RCC campus, Corey Ebenhack?
We also don't track that particular demographic on our campus.
Linda Schott has joined us. She's the president of Southern Oregon University. If you want to scooch up to the microphone, I did want to ask you about the comparing of notes with other campuses across the country. There was a reference in your statement recently about having some discussions with the American Association of State Colleges and Universities.
There was an initiative that I signed on to that I don't believe was affiliated with AASCNU, but there were over 600 colleges and university presidents who signed it. That was particularly for the DACA students, for the Dreamers. And I just think that started in Southern California, and I think all of us who signed on to that felt that those students are already on our campuses, they're doing well, and we want them to be able to continue and finish their educations.
So is anybody expressing a fear of being deported themselves? I mean, have you had those sorts of contacts with students on either of your campuses?
I've not heard outright or directly from our students saying that there is a fear that they're going to be deported, but there is a sense of a chilly or a hostile environment people who are concerned about their loved ones. I think that our students on our campus are trying to show a brave face, but when they're around their loved ones off campus at some of our other gatherings and programs, some of that vulnerability shines through.
Corey Ebenhack, I want to hear about the Right to Learn Declaration by Rogue Community College. Was that already in place, or was this put in place recently?
So the Right to Learn document was put in place as a response to the shifting political climate, but I think it's based on foundational documents that all community colleges have enjoyed since our inception in the 60s, the open access institution that welcomes, you know, anyone regardless of their social position, I think is represented in our Right to Learn document, as well as basic FERPA, Federal Educational Right to Privacy Act standards. So we didn't add anything new. We just reaffirmed the value that the community colleges have always had in our society.
You anticipated the next question. I was going to ask about FERPA because that is mentioned in the right to learn. What is FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act? Marjorie, you probably have as much experience with this as anybody.
Definitely. It's just ensuring that our students have a right to privacy and that we're not divulging their personal information to people who don't have a right to know or who don't have the consent of our students to provide that information. And so as we look at what requests might be made, we have to take that into consideration. So some of the news with the executive orders in terms of gaining that information about our students, we have to be very careful about what other laws we might be violating in trying to produce that information. And I think that that's cropped up with sanctuary campuses and thinking about what does that really mean. For us, it means that making sure that if people are requesting that information, that they have a warrant for that information, and that we also have to recognize that we are beholden to state law, in which Oregon is a sanctuary state.
So, Linda Schott, this puts any campus, I would think, in something of a strange legal zone to try to figure out what laws to take care of, and then to, as Marjorie just mentioned, try not to run afoul of other ones.
It does, and it's something we were thinking about, and our legal counsel joined with legal counsels from the other public universities to sort of think this through. The position we've taken is that we're going to abide by the policies that we have in place because those were put in place in alignment with state and federal law, and as long as we continue to act in those ways, if things shift at the federal level, then, you know, we'll have to change later, but right now, we're going to stick with what we've been doing.
Education and immigration, the topic here on the Jefferson Exchange. Linda Schott is the president of Southern Oregon University. Marjorie Trueblood Gamble is the director of diversity and inclusion. And from Rogue Community College, we have Corey Ebenhack, who's the vice president of student services. We invite you to join the conversation on the exchange, 800-838-3760, to come in by phone. Send your emails to jx@jeffnet.org. RCC's declaration, to come back to laws, points out that campus security have no authority to enforce federal immigration laws and won't. Is that something you had to research, or was it something you just knew right off the bat?
No, I think it's something that we know right off the bat. I think it's part of FERPA, and as Marjorie stated pretty clearly, I think federal agents need to have a subpoena or a warrant for confidential information about our students.
So, Marjorie, you did mention sanctuary status. Does SOU have a de facto sanctuary situation going on?
I think de facto, and the fact that Ashland is a sanctuary city, Oregon is a sanctuary state. In fact, Governor Brown doubled down on the fact that we are a sanctuary state, reminding all civil servants and state officials to not help enforce immigration acts that are happening nationally. And so thinking about that, thinking about the fact that our campus public safety can't aid in ICE efforts, knowing that our local law enforcement have also published statements reminding people that they can't aid in ICE efforts as well are important things to consider, and especially in Southern Oregon.
ICE being Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Have there been any ICE efforts that you're aware of, either considered or committed on either one of your campuses? Corey, I'm seeing a no from you.
Not that I'm aware of.
And not on our campus either.
So I imagine there's a fair amount of static that must come in, and probably closer to your office, Linda, than to the other two, because you're the head of the entire university. But I was just reading this morning that, you know, about 80% of the country does believe in immigration, but a similar percentage also is not crazy about sanctuary cities and the whole sanctuary concept. So I wonder how much static you get about that.
There was a period where I was getting some emails from people all over the spectrum. Right now, I'm not hearing much. I think, you know, SOU has made clear we have commitments to the well-being of our students. At the same time, we're a law-abiding institution. So we judiciously balance those commitments and try to think through decisions without taking a kind of doctrinaire position. We will definitely uphold the rights of our students and do our best to protect them. We're also, though, not going to stand in vigorous, you know, opposition to federal law. So all I can tell you is that we will think about it and we will be careful and judicious and abide by current law as best we can. They've put us in kind of a difficult position, so there's not an easy answer.
So I guess that the basic question is, I mean, does it come from a political, philosophical place, or is it just the idea that, that people who meet your standards for inclusion at the university, you'll take and you'll educate them?
That's the primary, is that, you know, we are an educational institution. I think pretty much everybody who works at places like SOU and RCC believes that education empowers individuals and improves their lives. And that's what we want to continue doing. We know we do that in the context of state and federal law and state and federal politics. But to some extent, we'd like to just focus on our core mission and do what we do best, which is really working with our students.
I'm focused on SOU so far, but Corey, I have to believe that there are contacts at RCC from people who say, hey, look, my taxes fund these places. We should be educating only American citizens.
I'm not really aware of any of those emails, to be honest with you, or conversations. Our president may know more information about those kind of conversations than I do, but I would agree with exactly what Linda has just described. I think those of us who work in education are committed to that core principle that education is not only good for the individual, but it's good for the society. It's good for our surrounding communities and the region that we work in. And good ideas come from everyone. So we have so many global and local issues to solve and problems to work on, that we want to be inclusive and find the best minds to help us solve those problems. And that's what we're dedicated to do.
So in addition to trying to make sure you're not running afoul of any laws, but trying to take care of your students at the same time, I wonder if there are any specific threats to funding thus far. Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, some of this comes through your office, I think, doesn't it?
I have not heard any specific threats to funding thus far.
And Linda?
I have worried about the federal government and federal financial student aid. We're not seeing this in Oregon because Oregon is a sanctuary state. But in other states, such as Texas, universities that have claimed sanctuary status have been told that their funding will be reduced by their governor. So it's worrisome. But it's part of a larger trend about funding for higher education that I think is also worrisome. I think partly what we're seeing out of the new administration is a push towards privatization. And that may, you know, federal financial aid for students used to be privately administered, and it may be that we're heading back in that direction. Also, you just have to worry for all students if the current administration is increasing funding in certain areas, such as immigration enforcement via a wall or
10,000 new ICE agents, which is what the Homeland Security Director's talked about.
Yes, or building up the American military. I just saw some information on that. There will be less money for other things. And that's really, I think, what I'm worried about more sort of cosmically at this point.
More strings attached and more difficulty getting funding just in general?
More difficulty getting funding in general. And then with Oregon facing a major budgetary crisis and a somewhere between $1.5, $1.8 billion deficit, how can the state step up to meet the needs that if the federal government pulls back, can the state step up? I think we're kind of at a crisis point for both the state of Oregon and for the federal government. And universities are going to do the best we can to you know, comply and to position ourselves for continued success for our students. But that's why you hear universities all around and community colleges talking about potential tuition increases.
Has anything been determined? I know this is a little side to the comment here, but anything particular for SOU that you're looking at for tuition increases?
Well, we won't decide that until our April board meeting, but we're having lots of communications. It all depends on what level of funding the state ends up providing, but we're looking at scenarios that run anywhere from about 8% to, say, 12% increase.
All right. Never a dull moment in public higher education, and this is certainly not one of those, particularly when you throw the immigration question in here and the concerns about students who may not have documentation or who are in families where other people don't have documentation. We're talking to Linda Schott and Marjorie Trueblood Gamble from Southern Oregon University. Corey Ebenhack is the Vice President of Student Services at Rogue Community College. You can join the conversation on the Jefferson Exchange. Education, immigration, how to work out all these parts together. 800-838-3760 for your phone calls, your emails. Go to jx@jeffnet.org. Corey, at RCC, in the document announcing the right to learn, there's a discussion of creating safe zones for students. Tell us a bit about those.
So safe zone training and safe zones is an old concept, I believe, on many college campuses. I think the LGBTQA community has engaged in safe zone access for many years, and it's an expansion of that basic idea that students have a place to go. Many times it's a counselor's office or another confidential space, a multicultural center, that they can process and maybe even reveal to somebody what their particular situation is, talk through that feeling of isolation and fear with someone they know is a safe person, and it's a safe zone, literally. And so I think it's a huge support on college campuses, because I think, you know, the Maslow's hierarchy of needs is a pretty clear definition or a clear rubric to use in your mind. You need to have safety and security before you can move up into higher issues like learning.
Take care of food, clothing, shelter, the basic needs first.
That's exactly right. Yeah. You got to get your basic needs met. And I think it's important that colleges recognize that students are anxious and agitated, and it's difficult to focus in the classroom, to function effectively socially on campus when you come from a place of fear and worry. And so safe zones, in my opinion, are critical supports for all students.
And I see nods coming from Marjorie Trueblood Gamble, but I also can think back to columns I've read from the likes of George Will, who were talking about the whiny babies they see on campuses these days. So give us the zone in there between whiny baby and safe zone, and what how you see the needs of the students being met.
I think that when we're trying to educate our students, we need to make sure that they can be whole people and leave our institutions as whole people, not only empowered to go forth with the education that they have, but also feel good in the skin that they are in. And so having safe zones across campus for all kinds of identities, but especially for those who are most marginalized, is important so that they can reap the benefits of what it is that we're trying to extend to them.
In the kind of counseling that Corey was talking about, I mean, things are kept confidential, but I wonder if there are any requirements upon higher education institutions do you encourage people not to tell you what their immigration status is, for example?
As a practice for SOU, we don't share that information widely. There are a select few folks who know who our undocumented students are. I don't even have access to all of the folks. We have a few courageous students who are out and advocating very strongly for Dreamers and other undocumented students. But aside from those folks, I don't know who they are. And I think that they feel that there is some protection in that anonymity that is there.
But you're right about the fact that some people do flip that script completely around. I was reading about a protest in Portland yesterday with the undocumented and unafraid. The people are saying, here's my name. They were talking to news media. And I wonder what kinds of things you say to them about any caution they might be applying.
I feel that those who are activated to stand up for themselves and feel that that's a cause that they would like to fight for, they should feel empowered to do so. And they have that right. And I think that they know what the risks are. without us having to remind them of those things. And so I think that they've weighed those things and are trying to make the difference that they would like to see made.
Linda Schott, your message to the SOU community on January 31st after the initial travel ban mentions the inscription over the doorway at Churchill Hall that you walk through every day. What's the quote?
The quote is, "The difficulties of democracy are the opportunities of education." And I love that quote. I think it's really come into focus for our entire campus in the last few months. And regardless of where you stand on the political spectrum, I think everybody in the United States is committed to our democracy. And the idea that education helps prepare people to better participate in that democracy is an important one that goes to the founding of our nation. Perhaps we've strayed away from it. Perhaps we need to refocus a bit on exactly how we prepare our students and our graduates for participating in our democracy. But it's a very important sentiment, and I couldn't believe how timely it was that it's not like it suddenly appeared on our building. It's like I suddenly noticed it on our building. And I'd like to add that one of the things that we've talked about is the importance of students being able to stand up and use their voices, whatever those voices will say. We really want students to, as I've said in a couple of messages, both vigorously exercise their free speech, but vigorously care for each other. So to recognize that we're all part of a learning community, we must learn to get along with each other and to exchange our ideas forcefully but respectfully. So that's what we're really trying to push forward. And I think that if we, while students can have a safe space to go on campus, and that's an important kind of refuge that can allow them to draw the strength they need to go back out and engage in these discussions, it's really important for us to say, don't just cower when people say something that you disagree with. Step up and use your voice.
All right, lots of things going on both campuses. Well, it's actually more than just two campuses. RCC and SOU share one in downtown Medford. RCC's got two others, and then SOU's got its main campus in Ashland. Linda Schott is the president at SOU. Marjorie Trueblood-Gamble, the director of diversity and inclusion. Corey Ebenhack is the vice president of student services at RCC. Thank you all for joining us on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
Thank you.